I'm Matthew Smith, Vermont Edition producer, and I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Last Saturday, people from around the state and actually all over the country gathered at the 16th annual Translating Identity Conference at UVM. The conference is open to all genders and transgender identities. There were talks, work groups, and discussions focusing on a gender lens on topics ranging from healthcare to education, with the aim of fostering a sense of inclusion and community. Vermont Edition producer Matthew Smith went to the conference and talked with some of the participants. Max Jennings is an elementary school teacher in Montpelier. Here he is describing how he came out to his colleagues and school district.
I came out 2 years ago, and I sent out an email to all the staff and said, hey, this is who I am. I hope people can accept it. And everyone was totally open to it and let me come in and supported me and use the right pronouns. And the kids have been amazing. And like our administration in particular has really focused on like how can they help me and help other kids in the district that might identify the same way. It's not about the pronouns in the end. It's just about that and who you are as a person and being able to show up and be your like true authentic self. And I feel like I'm able to do that in Montpelier, which is a huge compliment to my district. I just feel really proud to be a trans person.
Jessica Pellet grew up in Morrisville and now lives in Hinesburg. She recently transitioned, and last month she remarried her wife, which she calls the most important part of her transition. Here's a little bit about her experience growing up in Vermont.
Experience in Vermont before coming out, pretty transphobic, homophobic as a child through high school, and college wasn't bad, and I hit it well. Can't do it anymore, though. Most trans femme people that I talk to are recovering from being scared and very, very angry. You come out, you don't have to be scared anymore, at least not about that. And the anger kind of goes away. So now you can smile and enjoy your life.
And Elle is a 19-year-old student at Champlain College who grew up in Williamstown, Vermont. They came out their sophomore year of college. They say a more open attitude toward gender expressions would help everyone.
Acknowledging diverse identities in any space you enter would just make things a better place. I think just even when walking down the street, like it would be better to be acknowledged in a positive light rather than like glared at. We're no different. We're still people, and I think people forget that sometimes, is that like queer people are still people.
Today on Vermont Edition, we're starting from that point. Should be obvious, but perhaps needs to be restated, as Elle just said. Queer and gender nonconforming people are people first. But it can be illuminating to hear them talk about their experiences in Vermont. What's joyful? What's a challenge? What kinds of resources are out there to help make life smoother? Here in the studio with me now is Ezra Totten. He's 14 and lives in Burlington, and he told his parents he was transgender a few years ago. Ezra, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Did you have to skip school to be here?
I went to my first two blocks and then I came here.
Well, I really appreciate it. Also here in the studio is Jess Kell, Ezra's mom. Jess, it's nice to have you here with us too.
Thanks for having us.
Ezra, can you talk a little bit about your first memory as a kid of really realizing or feeling like your gender didn't line up with what you were being called or what people assumed your gender was?
I think it was around fourth grade. There was a kid who was like really rude to me about not really identifying as like a girl. I didn't really wear girl clothes. And that started like putting thoughts into my head. And then sixth grade, I was like, that's it. It like clicked in my head and I was like, okay, I'm trans.
How did you start to understand that trans was a thing, you know, that you could sort of, that you could think about, okay, I'm not a girl, I'm a boy, and here's how I can explain that?
I don't know. I always was different. I never, from the age of three, I didn't wear dresses. And it, like, kindergarten chopped off all my hair. So I was kind of like, I was never exactly like a girly girl. I was always a tomboy and had a lot of guy friends. And it was, that was kind of it.
And it was like fourth, fifth grade that you realized, oh, wait, no, I'm not a girl.
Yeah. I did identify as gender nonconforming for a while to kind of like figure out, okay, what on the gender scale, what am I? And that took a few years.
How did you tell your parents?
I was in my I was in a therapy session with my therapist, and we had been talking about it for a little while. And so I emailed my parents. I'm trans. I want to get top surgery. I want to start hormones. I want to change my name. Like, really, like, it was, like, all in this one email. And that's just, like, how I came out.
Why'd you decide to email them? Easier than talking in person?
Yeah, I felt like it was an easier escape to talking about it.
So, Jess, as a parent here, you're watching Ezra grapple with these things and trying to figure them out for yourself. How did you, from your perspective, sort of, you know, one step removed as a parent, see Ezra grappling with this?
From the time Ezra was really little, about three, he was about 3-4 years old when he first told us he was not wearing dresses. And so he began wearing boys' clothes and identifying as a tomboy. So that was really easy and clear. He wanted to cut all his hair off, and we said, okay, no problem. So we knew from a really young age that we had a gender nonconforming child.
And is that what you said in your head? I mean, is that what you and your partner were thinking? Like, here's our gender nonconforming child. Or is that how you sort of refer to it now?
It's partially what we were thinking and observing and feeling at that point. Within a few years, he was identifying as queer and as a lesbian, and actually came out to his fifth grade class as a lesbian. So at that point, we really just thought, we have a child who's queer identified, lesbian identified, and whose presentation is more masculine.
And then when Ezra sent you that email, what did you think?
We were completely surprised. We weren't expecting it. Which is really funny, because as we look back now, I look at pictures of Ezra, school pictures from second, third, and fourth grade, and there he is in a button-down shirt and tie with short hair and a sweater vest. And I look at him now and think, oh, look at that adorable little boy. How did we not see that?
Yeah. Ezra, when your parents responded in the way that they did, like, oh, gosh, this just wasn't on our radar, how did that feel to you? Was it an okay response?
Yeah. I mean, from a young age, when I stopped wearing dresses, they were just really fine of how I identified. They didn't, they were just like, Z is Z. That's it. They've always kind of let me and my brothers decide what kind of clothes we want, how long our hair is, and stuff like that. So it's like, I definitely could tell that they weren't expecting me to come out as trans. But immediately, my mom was always doing, my mom is still doing, like, research, and it's really awesome, and she does a lot of awesome stuff for us.
So there was a lot in that email, Jess, that Ezra sent you. I'm trans. I want to change my name. I'm changing my gender pronouns. I want to have top surgery. I mean, there's a lot to digest in that. How did you pick that apart to say, like, okay, here are our first steps. Here's how we're going to support you. Let's take this step by step.
Yeah, it was a lot to process, and we definitely, I would say that our approach since that time, and I can't speak for anyone else, but for our family, the right approach was to say, how do we slow down the process a little bit? What do we pick out? We started by adjusting Z's name, and we began calling Z by Ezra Z, which is had been his nickname. So we transitioned from his birth name to that nickname. That was the first step. Really getting more involved with accessing resources, therapists, folks who specialize in gender, really getting information and trying to figure it out step by step, day by day.
And using they-them pronouns.
You started with they-them pronouns,
yep.
Yeah.
And then you moved into he-him pronouns?
Yeah, so I used they-them pronouns for about a year. And then I was like, okay, I'm ready to use he-him pronouns. And that was it.
Who has that been hardest for in adjusting to? I mean, sometimes it's like the pronoun almost becomes a stumbling block for people. And you know, they either don't know what to use or don't know when to use it or don't know how to use it. Who's struggled with that in your life, Ezra?
I think my grandparents are the ones who, like, have struggled with it the most. All my friends were like, okay, you're a guy. and like just immediately went to using he, him pronouns and all that. And that was really awesome. My grandparents do still like stumble up and struggle a little bit. And like I don't really like I don't really care if they stumble and stuff because like they've known me since I was like born and I'm fine with that.
So it's okay. I mean, sometimes people worry they're going to mess up and they're just afraid to say anything.
Yeah, for me, it depends on how long they've known me. If they've known me for like a year or two and then find out that I'm trans and know my birth name and start calling me by like she, her pronouns and my birth name, then I'll like say, you need to stop. But if they've known me since I was little and we've gone to school together and all that, I'm more open to like them messing up.
You have officially, formally changed your name to Ezra, mm-hmm. right? What was it like to see documents that officially have your name as Ezra?
I almost started crying. I was like, I teared up with like joy. And it was really awesome that I got to finally do that. And we did it just in time for me to start high school as well. So I was like going into a new school, new teachers, and I could switch my name.
How did you choose Ezra?
We started brainstorming names in seventh grade, and my mom said the name Ezra, and I was like, well, there's a kid in my class named Ezra. I was like, I don't want to copy him. So I still went by Z, and I was like, I want to just be Zeke. So then I tried to find names that had Zeke as a, like a nickname for it, and I mm-hmm. found the name Ezekiel. I really liked that, and I used that name for like a year, like about a few, like a year. And then over the summer, my parents sat me down before we filled out the paperwork and were like, okay, are you sure you want this name? And I was like, well, I don't really like Ezekiel anymore. And I was like, I actually really like the name Ezra. And so like, I was like, it's Ezra now. And my parents like, okay. And it was like, it was really up to me. My mom did have a few guidelines for my name. It had to have a Z so she could still call me Z.
And you're okay with that?
Yeah. I mean, Z has been my nickname yeah. since I was really young. So it's like, it would have been hard to not have have that as my nickname. So yeah.
And the other Ezra, does he care?
He's no longer in my school.
Oh, phew. Problem solved.
Yeah.
Jess, what was it like for you when you saw Ezra, you know, almost cry with joy that this is official and not just official in your family and not just official with people who know and care about him, but like official to the world?
It was magical to see my child happy and proud and just so unbelievably content with himself. So that was a pretty magical moment when he opened the document. Being able to do that legally in Vermont without too much trouble, you know, we were deeply appreciative of the fact that it wasn't complicated for us here in Vermont.
Let me play you another experience here. Lisa Brucken lives in Northfield and identifies as a cisgendered bisexual woman. She's also the mother of an 18-year-old transgendered child. And Lisa says she's proud of her child, but she feels like she has to explain her kid's identity to people, and that often feels too personal.
I'm very accepting of however people want to be, but I'm not articulate yet about talking about it as far as my own child goes. So I always want to balance being proud of my child and being able to explain who they are, but also sometimes it's not anybody's business. And I also feel like if I am awkward talking about it, that makes them think that I feel awkward about it. It's a privilege for somebody to know that, because that in some ways it's kind of private information.
Jess, have you felt something like that?
Everybody's journey and story is their own personal journey. For us, watching Ezra identify as a tomboy and then as a lesbian and then as transgender in a community where we know so many folks, it's just been out there in the open the whole time. So we've been really comfortable talking about it.
Kelly Arbor grew up in Maine, but has now lived in Vermont for several decades. They work in HIV prevention and education with Vermont Care and also run a small business along with their partner. Kelly talked about how expressing gender gives power not only to themselves, but to others.
My rights and my expression and my, like, being able to fully be myself doesn't take away from somebody else. In fact, it gives them space and permission and sort of like a mentorship around, like, well, how do I express my gender? We are all expressing ourselves at every moment of the day. Every single thing that you put on your body is expressing your identity in some way, shape, or form. And to bring in a choice and to bring in intention, that's what we do. Like, that's what I do as a genderqueer person, is I think about the decisions, like, when I'm wearing this, people perceive me in this way. I don't pick male or female. I pick sort of everything.
Today, we're exploring the experience of being a transgender person living in Vermont, from healthcare to social situations to finding housing and jobs and perhaps worrying about safety. There's a lot to navigate when your gender doesn't conform to societal norms or differs from your sex at birth. Jessica Pellett grew up in Morrisville and now lives in Hinesburg. She attended the Translating Identity Conference at UVM last weekend. Despite the leaked memo from the Trump White House talking about defining gender as conforming to someone's genitalia at birth, Pellett says she's optimistic about the future.
I am hopeful. All right, so we've got a memo out there from the president, the administration. We've got all sorts of people that might hate us. But we also have Christine Hallquist. You can't turn a blind eye to trans people, gender nonconforming people, forever. Yeah. We're more accepting all around. We get more visible. There's more acceptance. So 10 years from now, it'll all be history. We'll be accepted. It'll be fine. You know, carpenter, electrical engineer, just professional. My name's Jessica. I'm a woman. Trans just happens to be the experience that I have.
We're talking with Ezra Totten today, who's almost 15 and is sharing his experience of realizing his gender identity as a trans teen, and with his mom, Jess Kell, about what it's been like to explore these ideas as a parent and to help navigate some of the trickier parts of the world for her son. And joining us as well now is Taylor Small. She is the Health and Wellness Director at Pride Center of Vermont in Burlington. Her job is to connect trans and gender nonconforming people with healthcare providers around the state. Taylor, it's a pleasure to have you in the conversation too now.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
So, you know, we just heard a little bit about that Trump memo, and I imagine you have some thoughts on that, Taylor, as we look at rights in Vermont and protections, but also the federal government sort of weighing in on this and who gets to call themselves what and when.
Yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful thing having the protections and laws in place that we do in Vermont. But on a federal level, we are seeing a higher level of anxiety within the trans and gender nonconforming community. I know specifically at the Pride Center of Vermont, we saw an uptake in folks who were accessing our support groups for trans and gender nonconforming folks after that memo, because they have no idea what that means on a larger level. And I think one of the biggest worries is the discrimination policies that are in place. So currently, they identify gender identity as one of those anti-discrimination policies. But if we were to change the definition of gender or the definition of sex and how we are going to be policing that, we see that folks can be discriminated within the workplace at a higher rate than they are already experiencing.
And they are already experiencing it.
Absolutely. We hear so often from our community members about just trying to access the opportunity to work and to be a part of the community. And we're constantly putting up these barriers where folks are either not getting jobs that they are able to take, but is it because of their gender identity? We're not able to know, but we know that we are seeing that unemployment rate at a higher rate for trans and gender nonconforming folks.
Jess Kell, when that Trump memo was leaked, your partner, Shay, was very angry on Facebook immediately, you know, very publicly angry. How did you feel about it?
Angry, scared, worried. You know, we know what our life is like in this little safe place, safe-ish place in Burlington and in Vermont. But what was that going to mean for Ezra? What is it going to mean for him leaving the state to go to college in a few years, to move into the workplace? You know, those are big questions that are really weighing heavily on us right now.
What about for you, Ezra? I mean, at 14, 15, you're not sheltered from that kind of news anymore. So what are your thoughts?
I was really scared. I do remember seeing my dad's post, and I think that was the first time I heard about it. My parents didn't really tell me about the memo until I saw my dad's Facebook post. And I saw what he wrote, and I was in my study hall, and I had finished all my work, and I was looking through Facebook, and I saw my dad's post, and I almost just, started crying, because, that was, the first time I had, really seen how much my parents were willing to fight. And, I knew they were willing to fight for me. But that was, even more exciting. And then I did talk about it with some of my friends, and a lot of my friends are cis and don't absolutely understand how much that can affect me. And I was, every time I was, getting in a conversation with my friends, I was almost, I was just exhausted. I was, I don't want to have to fight for my basic human rights anymore. I just don't. And that, that went into the elections that just happened.
Yeah, there's a lot to think about and a lot to talk about. Let me bring in some other voices here. We posted a note on Reddit, and there's a conversation going on there between and among people. And Pween says, it's interesting to me how different trans and non-binary people are. Transgender and non-binary are like opposite ends of the spectrum. One doesn't believe they're either male or female and that gender is a social construct. The other straight up depends on the constructs of classic genders and wants to look on the outside like they feel on the inside. But as I said, Reddit is a great place for conversation. And that's what's happening there. So Nullified Mimed replies to Pween and says, I think you're misinformed. Non-binary people are trans. Not all of them believe gender is a social construct or even ignore it. Some feel like a man some days, a woman other days, and neither on the rest or something else entirely. Some feel like both at once. Binary trans people, people that are either a man or a woman, often do believe that gender is socially constructed. Following norms is just a thing you have to do. Taylor Small, you deal with this professionally and personally. You identify as trans. How would you respond to that conversation?
Well, I think we have to come to a common definition of what trans means. So when we're talking about transgender identities, we're talking about someone who identifies with a different gender than they were assigned at birth. We have this wonderful theory that we can put a sonogram on and look in someone's stomach and identify both sex and gender in one foul swoop and assign it for someone's entire life. But sometimes we just don't get it right. And in those cases, non-binary, gender nonconforming, transgender are all under this wonderful umbrella together.
Maybe you should explain the difference between sex and gender.
The difference between sex and gender is a great question. So when we think about sex, we're looking about hormones, we're looking at genitalia, we're looking at chromosomes, and the way scientifically we classify someone's sex. And again, we think of that within a binary model, but it's not that way. So typically folks are focusing on male and female, but that disregards a whole subsect of our community, which is the intersex community. And that is someone who has a mixture of genitalia or hormones or chromosomes that are showing up in the body that are outside of our construction of male or female. And then when we look at gender, we're looking at someone's own understanding of their gender. The only person that can tell you their gender is themselves. You cannot tell anyone else what their gender is because you have no idea. So gender, one owns interpretation. Sex is when science is interfering and coming in with their definition of your body.
Let's go to Lane, who's calling in from Barrie. Hi, Lane. Go right ahead.
Hi. I'm actually sitting in the parking lot outside the bank where I'm about to change my name on my bank account. I identify as a non-binary person, and I just wanted to share some appreciation for the conversation, say thank you to all the folks sharing their experiences, and also want to name that they/them pronouns are not just transitional. Hearing in Ezra's story that he used they/them pronouns for a while and then moved into he/him pronouns, and just want to make sure that folks out there know there are many of us who are in many ages of our lives choosing to use they/them pronouns as the representation of our gender identities and our pronouns permanently. Thank you.
Yeah, Lane, thanks for sharing that and highlighting that they/them pronouns can be used, are used by many people as this is who I am. I am a they/them pronoun person. And, also right outside the bank about to change your name. What a striking coincidence and kind of a wonderful coincidence. Let's talk to John in Springfield. Hi, John. What are your thoughts today?
Hello. I was actually having a debate the other day about Christy Holquist with a friend of mine that came over,
And, you know, he's a redneck. He had such hateful things to say. And I told him, I kicked him out of my house. I was like, you know, you're not going to say that around my kid. I want my kid to love who they want, when they want, or whatever. I don't care what they become. And I also had a drummer 2 years ago came out as a transgender. And I guess the best thing would be just to ask the transgender person the questions about, you know, what it's like and understanding.
Well, John, I appreciate you sharing your thoughts with us. Let's get one more in here from Joyce in Hubbardton. Hi, Joyce.
Hi. I have a question. I know there's a law now that they have to have non-sex-oriented bathrooms or gender-oriented, you know, like neutral bathrooms.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of businesses still don't do that. If we see that situation, is that something that somebody would want to hear about to know, or you just kind of let it go and hope people change over time?
Yeah, Joyce, thanks for the call. So I think the Vermont law requires that all single-sex bathrooms in Vermont now be non-gender specific, so gender neutral. Anyone can use them. Some companies, it sounds like, don't realize that that's the law. Others may not be complying. Taylor Small, what do you think? How to report that?
As an ally, I would say speak up to the owner themselves first and let them know that they are breaking the law. And then moving forward, contacting your local representative to let them know when those folks aren't being met. And just for clarification, it's any single stall bathroom within any business or organization in the area that has to be gender neutral. It's not a choice.
Right. Not a choice. This is the law.
Yes.
Ezra, I saw you nodding your head. And so when Joyce was saying, what should I do? Should I tell somebody? You think, yes, tell somebody.
Yeah.
Do you tell somebody when you, I mean, is that a situation that you have to take upon yourself?
I don't usually use a gender neutral restroom all the time, but I think that businesses need to start complying. We went on a road trip down to Bennington like a month ago. I stopped at a rest stop and they had male, female, single stall restrooms. So I was like, you need to, like,
change it up.
Yeah.
So in Vermont, Lane was talking about going into the bank to officially change their name and also that they use they-them pronouns. And in Vermont, I think by the middle of next year, the Vermont driver's licenses should have a third option for gender. So male, female, and a non-binary option. Also in Vermont, you can legally change your birth certificate to reflect your gender, not the gender that you were assigned at birth by your sex. How helpful are these laws, Taylor?
Absolutely helpful. So there are still barriers in place where you're still having to get a therapist to sign off and say that your identity is valid. You can't just say what your identity is. You have to have someone else confirm that, which is such an arbitrary thing. And then moving forward, there's money that's involved in the process. And so when we're talking about before where trans folks are having difficulty finding sustainable work, trying to pay for a name change, for a gender marker change is difficult. But Vermont does make it significantly easier compared to other states.
Well, we actually got a question about that socioeconomic piece from Mark, who says, how does the experience of trans people in Vermont differ depending on their economic circumstances? It's great to have supportive parents, access to counseling and other resources, but what happens in families where parents don't have the knowledge or access to these things? It seems like all the examples we hear are from families that are relatively well off and not economically or socially challenged. And Ezra and Jess, we haven't been talking about, you know, your financial picture, but in terms of having a family that says, okay, we're going to deal with this, we're going to go to counseling, we accept, Ezra, who you are, you know, that's different from what some families experience. But I imagine that you've come in contact with other families, you talk to other kids and families who are experiencing something different. So what would you say, Jess?
I think that's why I feel one of the reasons I feel a really strong responsibility to advocate. It's on behalf of Ezra, but it's also on behalf of every kid out there. So when I'm noticing something in a school or in a program working with youth, I want to make sure that every kid's needs are being met. Every trans and non-binary kid is at least getting what they need from those social spaces.
Let's go to John calling in from Corinth. Hi, John.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Go right ahead.
I appreciate you having me as an air today.
And what's your question?
I just had a comment, and I do want to be polite, but liberals and progressives, I'm very independent. I can go progressives. They're all about nature and about cleaning the forests and the streams and the earth and nature, but not nature all the way, which is an inherent difference between masculinism and feminism. Homosexuality does exist in nature, but transgenderism seems a bit diseased. Again, I want to remain polite, but we want to look at nature and model nature and have a more straightforward look and a more clear view of really what's going on, which is more cultural decline and common mental instability.
Well, John, let me put your position to Taylor Small. How would you talk to John?
I mean, polite is a would not be the word that I'd use for this discussion. But honestly, when we're looking at identities, as I said before, gender is a personal experience. And I would like to think of humans as a higher level than other animals in the natural world. And so we have an intellectual ability to understand ourselves on a deeper level. So I would disagree with what you have to say and would encourage you to learn more about what trans identities are. We have a wonderful selection of resources on pridecentervt.org, including trans-specific resources. So,
how would we know if other animals have a different gender identity than their sex anyway?
Well, I haven't learned how to talk to animals yet, but if that ever comes to be, I'm sure they'll have to tell us all about their gender.
You know, it's hard when somebody is talking about your identity and who you are, but there are a lot of people who have questions or, you know, Ezra, you were saying, you know, even in some cases, people who you're close to who are scratching their heads like, I just don't totally get it. I don't understand. So how do you help people get to an understanding? Also realizing that doesn't have to always be on you, but you're here. You're being very public. You're open about who you are. So how do you address that?
I usually try to educate them to the best of my knowledge. And from my experience, I can't speak for others. I can't tell them exactly what a trans person goes through. All I can tell them is my experience. And I try to tell them, we're not all the same. We do have common aspects alike, but each person is different. Each trans person is different. And then when I can't really speak anymore, I tell them, go to Outright. That's a really good place for youth.
And Outright Vermont, a place where people who are have questions themselves can get access to resources or can get access to resources if they just have questions and don't necessarily want to put somebody in a position of having to explain themselves to them. But why do you choose to disclose, Ezra? Some people decide not to and some people decide to. I mean, your mother was saying you guys have been in a community, so people know you, but you have a choice about whether or not you want to disclose your trans identity.
I kind of bottled up my identity for so long and it just really weighed down on me and I didn't like that. And so even though I don't outwardly say it all the time, I have a bunch of buttons on my backpack, like the trans flag and he, him pronouns buttons. And I choose to be outwardly open because that's how I feel comfortable. And it just doesn't feel good to hide who I am.
We got a note from Ed in Bellows Falls who says, my wife and I will always be thankful to Vermont and its progressive leaders. When same-sex marriage was legal here, it was still illegal in New York, where we lived at the time. My son and his trans partner were able to marry in Bennington and have been happily married ever since. The town clerk made it a warm and welcoming ceremony, not simply a legal process. Vermont made a positive difference in their lives and ours. Taylor, before we leave, there's an important event coming up that I know you want to mention.
Yeah, Transgender Day of Remembrance is coming up on November 15th. And this is a focus on trans lives that have been lost throughout the year. As we know, trans folks are discriminated against and experience bias on higher levels. And more specifically, if we look on the intersection of trans identities and people of color, we know that the life expectancy for trans women of color is 31 years old. So we want to celebrate the ones who are alive and remember the ones who have passed.
We didn't much talk about healthcare and access to healthcare here in this program, but perhaps we can talk about that at another time as well. I want to thank all three of you for being on the show today, sharing your experiences, personal and professional. Ezra Totten is 14 and lives in Burlington. Jess Kell is Ezra's mom. Taylor Small is the Health and Wellness Director at the Pride Center of Vermont in Burlington. Thanks very much to all three of you.
Thank you for having us.
So much.